in the car, waiting in the grocery line, or anywhere, really, my mother would need to engage a precocious child, and she would teach me snippets of poems, of songs, and have me recite them back to her, or anyone else that would listen for that matter. Maybe some of us will remember this one. In 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. He had three ships and left from Spain. He sailed through sunshine, wind, and rain. He sailed by night, he sailed by day. He used the stars to find his way. A compass also helped him know how to find the way to go. 90 sailors were on board. Some men worked while others snored. That's one of my favorite lines. Then the workers went to sleep and others watched the ocean deep. Day after day they looked for land. They dreamed of trees and rocks and sand. October 12th, their dream came true. You never saw a happier crew. Indians, Indians, Columbus cried. His heart was filled with joyful pride. But India, the land was not. It was the Bahamas and it was hot. The Arakawak natives were very nice. They gave the sailors food and spice. Columbus sailed on to find some gold to bring back home, as he'd been told. He'd made the trip again and again, trading gold to bring to Spain. That doesn't really rhyme, but oh well. The first American? No, not quite. But Columbus was brave, and he was bright. My mother used to have me recite all sorts of little ditties. Most of them I can't share in this kind of company. But many of them actually stuck in my head, as you might imagine. But this is the only one that I have to tell you the truth, I feel somewhat betrayed by. You see, as a child, my imagination was strong, and I was thankful that Columbus had found those shores as he wandered the ocean. I imagined the ship tossing and turning and the water splashing on the deck, you know, imagination. I learned about his difficult journey in school and thought him to be a brave adventurer. I thought that he was worthy of a holiday and the Knights of Columbus to carry on his good works. Felt it was the right thing. However, over the years, as the real history of Columbus had been uncovered, I can no longer condone or tolerate a holiday in his name. I feel that what he did in the name of civilization was just wrong. His actions, the actions of his men, were anything but civilized. So instead, I'd like to offer this day as a day of mindfulness for the atrocities done in the name of expansion and entrepreneurial exploitation on the part of the white nation. I'm not the only one wondering about Columbus Day. There's clearly a movement afoot, and has been for years, that question the honoring of such a man. An article written in 2010 for the Huffington Post, Eric Kasem, founder and CEO of the Imagine Institute, a think tank for peace, wrote, "The Native Americans discovered North America about 14,000 years before Columbus." Just a drop in the bucket, really. Surprisingly, DNA evidence now suggests that courageous Polynesian adventurers sailed dugout canoes across the Pacific and settled in South America long before the Vikings. Second, Columbus wasn't a hero. When he set foot on that sandy beach in the Bahamas on October 12, 1492, Columbus discovered that the islands were inhabited by friendly, peaceful people called the Lucayans, Tainos, the Arawaks. Writing in his diary, Columbus said they were a handsome, smart kind of people. He noted that the gentle Arawaks were remarkable for their hospitality. They offered to share with anyone, and when asked for something, they never said no. He said the Arawaks had no weapons. Their society had neither criminals, prisons, or prisoners. They were so kind-hearted that Columbus noted in his diary that on the day the Santa Maria was shipwrecked, the Arawaks labored for hours to save his crew and his cargo. The native people were so honest that not one thing was missing. Columbus was so impressed with this hard work of these gentle islanders that he immediately seized their land for Spain, enslaved them to work in his brutal gold mines, Within only 2 years, 125,000, half of the population of the original natives on the island, were dead. I could go on and on with the gory details of what Columbus and his sailors did for fun to the indigenous people as they traveled around exploiting their good natures and the resources of the areas that they discovered. But that's not my point this morning. Although for those of you who do not know these stories, imagine the details, as horrible as your imaginations can go, and then you will almost be at the place of a historical fact. My aim this morning is to point at the atrocities done in the name of humankind. Atrocities done because of expansion. Atrocities done to secure resources and sanctioned in large measure by religion. Columbus Day stands as a monument to all that is wrong in the world, and the fact that he is still honored is just a mere tip of a looming iceberg that many would prefer to ignore, sometimes even me, to avert our eyes from, and yet in our heart of hearts, we have to know that so much of what is happening all around this world in the name of progress is wrong. Here's the real conundrum, not to overwhelm anyone. What Columbus did centuries ago is standard operating procedure, albeit much more overtly done with the world watching. We see snippets from battlefields, from places like Ferguson or immigration detention centers in Nogales, Texas. If we are not outraged about the state that our world is in, then we're not paying attention, or we are just numb because of the sheer magnitude of it all. Injustice is all around us, shrouded in greed. From immigration practices, over 47,000 children under the age of 18 are sleeping on mattresses held in pens in a detention center on the floors in Texas. To our banking industry, to healthcare, to fracking for natural gas, to the disposal of waste and the disregard for clean water. And the list goes on, and that is just in this country. If we look out into the world, to Western Africa, with the spread of Ebola, it is daunting, with the World Health Organization touting that if we do not act quickly, there will be over 1 million people infected by January. Someone asked me this week why Africans are so vulnerable to AIDS and now Ebola. My answer is poverty, which precipitates the lack of adequate health care, clean drinking water, sanitation, and knowledge, just to name a few. I read the other day that the start of AIDS in Africa began with a 2-year-old boy eating tainted bushmeat. Ebola started and can be traced to another small boy that was infected by a fruit bat. If we look to the Middle East, with its ancient civilization steeped in tradition, it is mind-boggling the sheer magnitude of oppression and discontent, in large measure due to religious biases, sect, sexual orientation, gender. They're all alive and well as oppression in full force. And then in the midst of it all, a bright shining star. The 2014 Nobel Peace Prize winner, one of two this year, Malala Yousafzai. I'm working on it. Despite her youth, explains NobelPrize.org, Malala has already fought for several years for the right of girls to education and has shown by example that children and young people, too, can contribute to improving their own situations. This she has done under the most dangerous of circumstances. Through her heroic struggle, she has become a leading spokesperson for girls' rights to education. It gets better. After the Taliban began attacking girls' schools in Swat, Malala gave a speech in Pakistan in September 2008. The title of her talk was, "How dare the Taliban take away my basic right to education?" She was 10 years old. And then she blogged at 11 under the alias for the BBC from Pakistan about girls and lack of education at 11. Malala won the Children's Peace Prize in 2011. On October 9th, 2012, a gunman boarded a bus and demanded to know who Malala was. She was 14 and on the Taliban's hit list, and he shot her in the head, and she survived. Maybe Monday's holiday should be named after Malala. She gave a speech at the United Nations on her 16th birthday in 2013. She's also written an autobiography, and I love the title, "I Am Malala, the Girl who Stood Up for Education and Was Shot by the Taliban," which was released in October 2013. Unfortunately, the Taliban still considers Malala a target. She's now 17, living in England, and the youngest recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize ever. From the mouths of babes. One person, willing to fight for justice can make a difference. But that one person, and each one of us for that matter, has a choice to either be mindful of our actions and work towards justice, or to be self-serving, which tends to pull one towards the desire for power, control, and greed. We've seen this happen over and over again throughout history. I'm certain that the Taliban believes that Malala is an agent of Satan, while we believe that she is an angel, speaking out against the oppression of her gender. In all of this, we have to wonder why. Why do agents of change have to risk and in large measure lose their lives? Why are there people all over this planet fighting and being imprisoned and dying because they say no more? As I've said repeatedly, greed, power, and control are seductive. They're insidious, and people are willing to kill to remain in power. Then again, I also say that it could be fear of difference. That idea that the other, those who have not been in power and control, and in large measure have been exploited for so long, have no access to power. One might worry that if and when they have the opportunity to wield that power, that there will be retribution. Is that cause for us to be afraid? Maybe we, the proverbial we, not you and I per se, but we are afraid of the oppressed. We are afraid of the huddled masses. Maybe we are even afraid that we could lose what we have if we are forced to share, if we're taxed too much. But then I think of Mandela, and I think of South Africa, and the work of Desmond Tutu, and I think that there is a better way, a way towards reconciliation. The real question that I ask this morning is, are we afraid of those who are different than us? Are we afraid that they will take away our freedom, our access, or our very lives? Maybe the Arawak of the Bahamas should have been warier of Columbus. Maybe the Arawak didn't have the ability to defend themselves and thought that if they were really nice, that Columbus would treat them with respect. Maybe the Native American King George, in his armed rebellion against settlers of this area, was justified. It's really hard to know, remembering that there are a lot of different sides with so many different agendas. I wonder if Columbus's religious beliefs supported his behavior or kept him awake at night. I wonder the same about the settlers of Mass Bay, or, you know, if they were just pawns in a much larger game. People with hopes, dreams, aspirations want so much to be accepted, to be present, to be welcomed. As Unitarian Universalists, we have values that ask more from us. Here is a children's version of our principles, which plainly explains that we believe that each and every person is important. We believe that all people should be treated fairly and kindly. We believe that we should accept one another and keep on learning together. We believe that each person must be free to search for what is true and right in life. We believe that all persons should have a vote about the things that concern them. We believe in working for peace, free, fair world. We believe in caring for our planet Earth, the home we share with all living things. These are important values that remind us of what is important in life. We don't have dogma to guide us, constrain or manipulate us. We have our conscience, our experience, and our desire to do good in the world. We have the teachings of Unitarians such as Ralph Waldo Emerson and Theodore Parker to guide us. Our principles are more than just words to us as we do the work and share our voices in this community, and as far out as our travels and work might take us. We work to reduce hunger. We show up to take care of people at pantries or homeless in Wayland in Framingham. We fundraise to make clean drinking water a reality in third world countries. We advocate on the local, state, and national levels for work, and we work for justice always. What we believe and hope is that the right thing that we do is the right thing for all who are involved. But how can we know we're doing the right thing for certain? I imagine that if we strive towards that image of creating the beloved community together with our brothers, sisters, and others that the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. envisioned for us, we will not falter. It isn't a beloved, segregated, and divided community based on religious affiliation or secular ideals. It is a rainbow nation, filled with people of all religions, and many who are not religious or spiritual. It is a community where color is not a curse, but a part of our unique and wonderful character. It is a community where there is little suffering, and no hunger, and no homelessness. It is not for profit, or for greed community, or just another market to exploit, or resources to amass. This is my dream, too. Beloved community, we have to ask ourselves this morning one question. Is civilization civilized? And if not, do we inspire the world and its people to change our modus operandi? I, for one, am humbled and inspired by Malala's commitment and fearlessness. I have to say that as a white daughter of a rainbow nation, I feel that I need to make a personal pledge to not repeat the evils of my white forebears, nor to allow them to be carried out in the stupor of my white middle class complacency. Not in my name will such atrocities remain. That is my pledge. As we look towards a holiday that holds up and honors a man who exemplified in many ways the worst of what humankind can offer. I can only imagine that I hope that Columbus was a good man to his family, to his tribe. But his willingness to exploit the generosity of others, to murder, mutilate, enslave, does not make him a man that I would ever want to celebrate. Some traditions are just not worth carrying forward. Let us offer tomorrow as a day to atone for the sins of those who have come before, a day to remember the atrocities in the name of civilization, and let it be a Herculean call for radical activism to make a difference in the world, one person, and defeating one injustice at a time. And when we refuse to sit quietly anymore, and when we are all standing as agents of change, it is then that we will see the outline of the shore, that beloved community realized somewhere there, out on the horizon. For this we pray, blessed be, amen.